This morning I'd like to talk with you for a few minutes about a particular event or series of events in Jesus Christ's life. It's often called when he was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. And I just thought we would look at that briefly this morning. Some of the events leading up to that and some of the events that actually occurred while he was in the Garden of Gethsemane praying. These events, of course, happened immediately after that long, and actually not that long, but that episode in the upper room where he and the apostles had the Last Supper. And the Last Supper ends with this statement in John chapter 18, verse 1. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Matthew 26:30 and Mark 14:26 add, and when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. And Luke 22:39 says, coming out, he went to the Mount of Olives, as he was accustomed, and his disciples also followed him. So here we get various bits of information about their trip to the Garden of Gethsemane. John tells us that it is a garden, and it was also located in an area called the Mount of Olives. And also it is an area called Gethsemane. And this particular area where all of these things are is in the northern part of the Kidron Valley. And it is east of the Temple Mount, east of the city of Jerusalem. This whole Kidron Valley is about 20 miles long. And in that 20 miles, it's hard for us to envision this in Missouri, which is relatively flat. But in that 20 miles, it descends in elevation for almost 4,000 feet, or 3,912 feet to be exact. And this valley that they crossed was about 100 feet deep and about 390 feet across. The distance to do this is about 2.5 miles. So it probably took about 40 to 50 minutes for the Jesus and his disciples and apostles to travel this distance. If they were fast walkers, they might do it in 25 minutes. But someone who walks slowly might take over an hour. What happened in the Garden of Gethsemane is a very emotional event in Jesus Christ's life, and we can learn several things from it. But first, let's just talk for a moment about an event that happened right before this, and because it is also sort of involved in this too. And that is where Jesus predicts that not only Peter, but also the other apostles will, specifically Peter will deny Christ, but also the other apostles may also flee him. So Matthew 26:31-35, the gospel author Matthew says, then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter answered and said to him, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you that this night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. And Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And so said all the disciples. Notice here that we often think about Peter having this prophecy written about him, and that is certainly correct. But it also, Jesus is saying, all of you will be made to stumble. All of you. Let's look at what Mark says about the same event. It's in Mark chapter 14, beginning with verse 27. In Mark, it says, then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. Peter said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble, yet I will not be." Jesus said to him, "Assuredly I say to you that today, even this night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." But he spoke more vehemently, "If I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And they all said likewise. Now this word that is translated in the translation I've been reading here for stumble, in the King James Version, that same word is translated offended. And in the New American Standard and the English Standard Version, that word is translated as fall away. And Jesus, citing in another place, Zechariah 13 and 7, declares that they will all be offended by his being arrested, abused, rejected, and killed. When the shepherd is stricken, Jesus is saying the sheep will be scattered. And Jesus is stating that his apostles would be as timid as sheep when he is arrested. And we really don't know exactly what happened to the other disciples and apostles. The only one we really know about for the next 24 hours after his arrest is Peter and John. But we do know that they fled. All the rest of them fled. And at least Peter and John stayed nearby Jesus, where all of the rest of them seem to have totally deserted him. So let's look at what is happening in the Garden of Gethsemane. But first, we'll just mention that Jesus sought to comfort and console and also to add confidence to the people who were following him, as we'll see in just a moment. But first, Peter was disgusted by the statement that he would deny Jesus three times. In Luke 22, 31 through 34, we get a little bit else, another perspective on what is happening, where Luke describes in this particular passage, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you, that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned away, strengthen your brothers." And Peter said to him, "Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death." And Jesus said, "I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day until you deny three times that you know me." So let's go on and talk about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. We've already heard the passage about this from Matthew chapter 26, beginning with verse 36. Let me also read you the passage from Mark chapter 14, beginning with verse 32. There, the author Mark says, "Then they came to a place which was named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I pray.' And he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch.' He went a little further and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, 'Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will.' Then he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, 'Simon, are you sleeping? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak.' Again he went away and prayed and spoke the same words. And when he returned, he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. Then he came the third time and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour is come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.'" And also Luke describes the same event in Luke chapter 22, beginning with verse 40. "When he came to the place, he said to them, 'Pray that you may not enter into temptation.' And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and prayed, saying, 'Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done.' Then an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, Then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. When he rose up from prayer and had come to his disciples, he found them sleeping from sorrow. Then he said to them, "Why do you sleep? Rise and pray, lest you enter into temptation." So, as I already mentioned, Matthew, Mark, and Luke described this area as a place, call it Gethsemane. John calls it a garden in John 18 and 1. The word Gethsemane means oil press. So it's called the Mount of Olives. So there was obviously an oil press there also, where the oils would be pressed to where the olives would be pressed to make oil. It may have been a walled garden. Today there's also a cave in the area, right in the exact same area, which is called Gethsemane. And that cave is about 55 feet long and 29 and a half feet wide. So all of these areas, the general area, this cave, is called Gethsemane. And as soon as they came to Gethsemane, Jesus told the eight to remain at the entrance while he went further into the garden to pray. And he took three of the apostles with him, Peter, James, and John, on into the garden to be with him, or nearby as he prays. It describes Jesus as being sorrowful and deeply distressed in Matthew 26, like we heard in the reading. Sorrowful comes from a Greek word which suggests to be troubled or made troubled, or to be sorrowful or to be grieved. Deeply distressed comes from the Greek word that means to be under great distress, to be filled with anguish. He told Peter, James, and John in Matthew 26, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me." Exceedingly sorrowful, the word that's translated that is refers to surrounded by grief, surrounded by sorrow, overcome by grief, or exceedingly sorrowful. He is distressed, he's agonized, he's emotional. He's so emotional, it's almost even unto death. So he is extremely emotional about what he is about to pray about, because he knows what is coming, and he is in distress because of it, because of the great trials that he is soon going to be experiencing. He told them, that is Peter, James, and John, to stay and watch while he went about a stone's throw further into the garden. That might have been about another 150 feet. And he urges them to pray for strength as they face temptation, because Jesus knew not only what was about to come to him, but he also knew what his apostles were about to experience. And so he urged them to pray for strength, because as they faced temptation, he knew that they would also be severely tested. And in Matthew 26, and it says Jesus fell on his face. In Mark 14, it says Jesus fell on the ground. Jesus typically prayed standing up with their hands extended, lifting their hands toward heaven. So someone under great distress and in a very emotional situation would get down on their knees and would pray. Some examples from the Gospels are in Mark 5, verse 22, where Jairus begged for the life of his daughter. Remember in Mark 5, where it says, "Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, so that she may be made well and alive.'" There's an example of how extreme emotional distress would cause someone to fall to their knees in first century Judea. Also, the Syrophoenician woman in Matthew 7, verse 25, she also pled for her demon-possessed daughter, and she also fell to her knees in distress and great emotion. Mark 7:25, "But immediately a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter." So Jesus was filled with great emotion because he knew what his apostles and also himself, he himself was about to experience. Jesus was about to experience and was dreading the suffering of the trial, the suffering of the huge physical problems and distress of being crucified. And finally, the great and terrible event of having all the sins of all of mankind placed on him as he was dying. His first prayer is he says, "O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will," in Matthew 26. He also said in Mark 14, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will." The word Abba means Father. Typically, Father in the first century, he was speaking Aramaic when he said that. We know that because it's actually written. The Aramaic word is written there in the Greek text. And it's a word of great reverence and respect, like a child would give toward their father. And so Jesus was addressing God in a very respectful and reverent way. And Jesus, of course, is very emotional here. He is having intense feelings about avoiding a terrible, dangerous, and painful situation. And Jesus was hoping that there might be some possible way that he would not have to go through this. And so that is what he is praying. If it is possible, please let this cup pass from me so I will not have to experience what is coming. When Jesus returned from his first prayer, the apostles were sleeping. The three apostles were speaking. And how does he react? Well, in Matthew 26, he lovingly and compassionately chastised them. Jesus says, "What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak." So Jesus criticizes them gently and compassionately and encourages them to struggle to get the strength that they need to overcome what they are about to experience. The second prayer, also in Matthew 26, and also in Luke and Mark, Jesus says in Matthew, "O my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done." This prayer suggests a realization that he might not be able to avoid the horrors of the crucifixion and taking on the sins of the world. The Father compassionately sends him an angel to strengthen him. And we see this in Luke chapter 22, verse 43. And he returns from his second prayer. And once again, Jesus finds that they are asleep again. Mark gives the information that they observed that their eyes were heavy. They were physically and emotionally exhausted. The apostles are going through a lot emotionally also, with the Last Supper, having Jesus wash their feet, and all the predictions that Jesus says that one of them will betray him. The apostles are going through a lot also, and they are also seem to be emotionally and physically exhausted. They have fallen asleep again. So Jesus goes away and prays for a third time in Matthew 26, verse 44. His prayers grow in intensity. Luke describes his agonizing prayer. He says in verse 44 of Luke chapter 22, "And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. Then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground." This is just incredible intensity. There is a medical condition, and after I read this in a commentary, I actually looked it up online to confirm it, and it is really correct, it's called, I can't pronounce it very well, it's hematidrosis. And this is a condition where people who are under extreme emotional distress, and it's very rare, their capillaries of their sweat glands will actually start to put blood into their sweat because of they were so emotionally distressed. And so this is a true medical condition that we're reading about here in Luke chapter 22, which people on rare occasions do experience when they are under extreme emotional distress. And after praying, he returned and asked, "Are you still sleeping and resting?" And in Matthew 46, verse 45. He then is informed of immediate and pending events. "And behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go, be going. See, my betrayer is at hand, and there is nothing else they could do for him." So let's look just a moment and see what we've seen in the prayers. First of all, Jesus is acknowledging his total loyalty to God. In all three prayers, he always is saying, "Whatever your will is, then then I will follow your will." Jesus has total loyalty to God, that he will follow whatever God decides is best. God the Father, whatever he decides is best, that's what he will do. So Jesus displays complete and trust and obedience to God's plan. Also, Jesus, he has an intense desire to not have to go through these painful and emotional struggles. And that's just a human reaction. Each one of us would be the same way. But Jesus overcomes those fears and those emotional struggles, and he carries out God's plan, even though he has resisted doing so for a period of time here. He's asked God to let this pass, but he ultimately follows God's plan because he knows that's what will be best for everyone in the long run. We see how overwhelming emotions were crushing him. He experiences life just like we do, where sometimes emotions can be overwhelming and almost crush us. And he has compassion for his apostles. Notice this. Each time his apostles are sleeping, he encourages them. He encourages them to do better and gently encourages them to overcome their own temptations and their own failures and to follow God's plan and God's missions just like he is doing. Of course, then comes the arrest and Judas comes up to him. In Matthew 26, beginning with verse 47, it says, "And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude, with swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now his betrayer had given them a sign, saying, 'Whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him.' Immediately he went up to Jesus and said, 'Greetings, Rabbi,' and kissed him. But Jesus said to him, 'Friend, why have you come?' Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And suddenly one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword, struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. But Jesus said to him, 'Put your sword in its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels? How then could the scriptures be fulfilled that it must happen thus? In that hour, Jesus said to the multitudes, Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you did not seize me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled.'" Also, Mark gives a similar account. Luke gives another account. John gives another account. All of them are almost identical, but each adding little bits of additional information that the others do not include. His arrest, it was once again a great ordeal. Judas, his betrayer, tells that he will identify Jesus with a kiss, and Judas leads him to the place where Jesus is praying. Remember that we read earlier how that Jesus and the apostles would frequently come to the Garden of Gethsemane. So Judas knew that this is probably where he and the disciples would be at. So he knew that this is where they were going because they had gone there many times before. How could Jesus so easily, so that's why Judas could find Jesus so easily. Why did it happen at night? Well, one of the best ideas I have is that the high priest wanted Jesus arrested away from the crowds in a quiet place so that he would not have to worry about any uproar or, rioting because the arrest had taken place in a more public place. So they're doing it here in the middle of the night in a very quiet garden, so that you don't have to worry about the crowds having a reaction against Jesus being arrested. And Judas is leading a large detachment of Roman soldiers, in addition to temple guards, basically the police force for the Sanhedrin. So in addition to the police force for the Sanhedrin, the temple guards, there's also a detachment of Roman soldiers. And the detachment of Roman soldiers, one of the four gospel accounts, tells us that because of the size it is described, that it would contain about 600 soldiers. So a large group of people have come to arrest this single man, Jesus Christ. And this is not uncommon. You'll remember when Paul was being escorted from Jerusalem back to Caesarea that the Romans used about 470 soldiers to do it. So Judas betrayed the Lord with a kiss. This is the sign that Judas gave to the soldiers that this was the person who was the person to be arrested. And in fact, not only did Judas kiss Jesus, but he called him Rabbi, Rabbi. He was speaking as a disciple would to a teacher. And of course, many people wonder what was going through Judas's mind. Why did he do this? But it's impossible for any of us to know exactly why Judas would do such a thing. So let's look briefly and see what we have seen here. First of all, we need to be careful about being overconfident about each of our spiritual strength. Peter and all the other apostles were saying, no, we will not betray you. We will not run away. Yet every one of them betrayed him in one way or another. We need to be careful not to be overconfident. The apostles said, I'll never forsake you, Lord. And yet they denied him that night. What was Jesus' reaction? He did not cast them off. He did not completely reject them. Rather, he welcomed them back. So we must not be overconfident shouldn't be overconfident on my own life. I should never overestimate my own spiritual strength, like it says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. So I need to stay determined to be loyal to Jesus Christ. Yet if I do fail, I must not quit. I must be like the 12 apostles and come back. Learn from my mistake and then come back and continue on. Also, doing the right thing and following God's plan can be extremely difficult and a very difficult and even emotional experience, because we will be tested. Jesus was tested, all the apostles were tested, and we will be tested also. We need to keep our ultimate loyalty to God and be determined to follow his plan. When I face life's toughest circumstances, I need to seek God, rely upon him, and pour myself out to him, just like Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane. Pour myself out to God and tell him what I am thinking and let him help me to continue to follow his plan like I am supposed to do, so that I can say, thy will be done just like Jesus did. So those are, I think, some of the lessons that we can relearn from these events in the Garden of Gethsemane and the events leading up to it. So if anyone would like to become a Christian, if they have any other reason that they would like or anything that they would like to bring before the group, please come forward as we stand and sing this closing song.